Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Tech Investor Podcast, powered by TechNode, seeking truth from facts when it comes to Chinese tech stocks and IPOs. I'm Elliot Zagman, and with me is a man who continuously, consistently, always beats his Lipper average. It's James Hall.
Okay, Lipper average. We're just going to move on from that. You can find us, you know, on Twitter if you have any questions. You know, we're trying to build a community, so reach out to us. I'm James Hull X. That's H-U-L-L-X. And Elliot?
At Elliot Zagman, E-L-L-I-O-T-T-Z-A-A-G-M-A-N. And be sure to...
Two T's, two A's.
Yeah, two right? T's, two A's, two L's. Yeah.
Two L's. I'm
all wasting right, and, letters.
Yeah. And be sure to check out technode.com/newsletters. We are powered by TechNode.
And make sure...
Let's see, today... Yeah.
Apple Podcast, 5 stars, and a positive review. If you have a bad review, just hit us up on Twitter. That's the best way to do it. But if you like us, yeah, 5 stars. 5 stars all the way, please. Anyways, so today what we're going to be doing is we're going to take a step back and look at everything kind of in the year on the year-to-date. It's our year-to-date episode. So our listeners will know that we follow a series of Chinese tech stocks, and we're going to see who's doing worst and who's doing best. And we're going to track them from worst to first. But the way that we're looking at this is, James, you've created a handy little index for us to compare these stocks' performances to. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, I call it the China Consumer Index. And it's about 82 stocks that are listed in the U.S. or Hong Kong. So I don't include A-share market because it tends to be even more volatile. But yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to compare these, basically all the stocks that we've, mostly all the stocks we've talked about that are on our watch list. We're going to compare these to this consumer index and look at how they've traded throughout the year.
And looking at your consumer index and compared to the stocks that are on our watch list, we'll share some of the stuff on our Twitter account. We'll probably try to post something as well. But just looking at this chart, you see what a difference a tweet makes. So we see general growth kind of happening throughout the year, except two major drop-offs. One of those being in early May, and the other being right towards the end of July. And these are both basically when you can peg them directly to Trump tweets or to kind of failed trade talks, I guess, huh?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was like about May 5th, there was a Trump tweet that was basically ended the trade negotiations and said that China went back on their word, right?
Right.
And that was the first one. And the second, actually, if you look at the index after that first tweet, there's just this like nice slow decline throughout May and into the beginning of June. And then in the beginning of June, it seemed like, you know, we were going to come back and China was, you know, we were going to have these negotiations again. And then it kind of went on up through July, kind of mostly flat, just up a little bit. And then right at the end of July, what happened again? We had another, the Trump tweet that's put about 10% tariff on $300 billion of goods. And that's supposed to start in September. So, you know, the question now is, are we going to see a nice flat, you know, August where people are kind of questioning still like what's going on here, or are we going to see a similar decline like we did in May? May was a little different though, right? We had escalation after the tweet. There was like Huawei stuff.
There was putting Huawei on the entity list, and then there was the fallout after that of having, you know, they're not knowing if they can use Android, right? And kind of seeing, okay, well, how much is this ban and this being put on the entity list, what is this actually going to affect? And it wiped out all the gains of the year, plus some. And at the beginning of the year, listeners, if they've listened to us since we started, which was like last fall, you know, when we started doing this podcast, like everything was tanking. And right around the end of December and January, things started to get back on track. And for the first half of the year, I mean, especially with U.S. markets, they've done really well. And Chinese markets would be on par with them more or less if it were not for these, you know, these trade issues, it seems. That seems to be the bigger factor than anything else. But let's get a little bit more into detail. Can you tell us about how you compiled this index that you have and how our stocks are doing in general compared to this index?
Yeah, so like I said, it's about 82 stocks listed in the U.S. and Hong Kong. They're all Chinese companies, and they're all companies I would consider to be consumer-facing businesses. And that's basically every company on our watch list, too. You know, so that's Tencent, Alibaba, Baidu, iQIYI, Xiaomi, JD, Pinduoduo, and Meituan. I also include Luckin because we did two episodes on that.
But yeah, and they're definitely a fun company to watch, that's for sure. Even though I don't know if they're a tech company, as we've discussed.
They are. Everything's through an app, right? You can't buy a Luckin coffee unless you have a mobile phone and you download the app. Like, you literally, if you walk in, you don't have a mobile phone, you're not getting the coffee.
So I guess that's what makes them a tech company. But just because it has to be accessed through an app, does it make them any more of a tech company than any other company that uses technology? Every company uses technology.
Exactly. So every company can be a tech company, and every company can basically also, if every company is able to be a tech company, then no company is a tech company.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway. So another thing, just to caveat before we dive in, is that, you know, these are just points in time, you know, like looking at these charts. I mean, we can move the time, you know, starting points to another week or another day. The percentages that we're going to talk about are going to be different. But that's why I kind of like looking at the chart. We'll see, you can see how it's gone and compared over time. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Also, when we're looking at this, what I want to do just real quick is to point either the blame or the credit. So if a company, particularly those that have done quite poorly, or the companies that have done quite well, you know, what is the reason for it? Are they just tracking the markets, or are they, is there something that happened to the company that was a fluke and they, you know, either went down quickly or went up very quickly? Or is it something that's more, kind of a deeper issue with the actual company, where the company is doing very well or doing, poorly, and that's why they're rising or falling, more or less in the market? So let's start off with one. I think that we have, this one probably is a very clear answer, I think, for both of us. And then we're going to start with the worst. We're going to move to the best. And the number one worst, the worst company, the worst performing company on our watch list, no surprise, is Baidu. I have right now looking at my numbers, which I get from Google. I don't have your fancy schmancy Bloomberg terminal. I am down 40% for the year. James, where do you have and where do you where are you placing the blame here?
So Baidu, I have down, around 40%, 39%, 40%. Yeah, I think the blame, I mean, they've tracked closely to the consumer index here, except for one period, and that was mid-May when they announced earnings. And that was, I mean, they had their worst quarter in a long time. And I think it's just performance. I have to put it on, blame on performance. And, you know, who gets blamed for performance? Probably the CEO, Robin Lee.
Well, I mean, we've talked about them in a number of ways before. I mean, they've kind of been born on, they've been born on third base, right? And for some reason, they're on second now. So there's a few kind of broader economic issues that have impacted them. Ad sales, they're dependent on ad sales. Ad sales have been weaker for Chinese internet companies. But aside from that, I mean, they have a long track record of swinging and missing operationally. And when it comes to execution, they have issues. However, I listened to the guys at The Motley Fool, and I follow them on Twitter. There's two guys who I particularly like. One is David Kretschmann. He is in charge of Fool Asia, but also Aaron Bush, who he's a younger guy. I think he might be one of the youngest guy on the Motley Fool kind of analyst team. But he does a lot of tech, emerging markets and gaming and things like that. So he's a fun guy to follow. But he's a little interested in Baidu, and he's a little bullish on them simply because just their price is so low right now.
Yeah.
They have, and that's kind of the bull argument right now, is that they may be a good value because they still have kind of that corner, right? And whether or not I've called them a rent seeker before, they might be, but at some point they're going to get to a low enough price where they're worth buying. And like, we don't like the company, but eventually, you know, it's whatever, there's a price that where it's worth buying. So who knows? I don't know where that is.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the bull case for Baidu is something's got to happen with AI. They got to kind of productize that, or there's got to be a turn in advertising, the market in general in China. And I think the problem in advertising, you know, we've talked about it with iQIYI when we looked at their earnings, but the problem is there's just too much inventory. Everyone's got a free app, or they have free, you know, freemium type thing, and they're trying to add more and more and more advertising. Everyone's trying to monetize at the same time because it's hard to raise more money. So there's just way too many ads. And that's, you know, I don't know. There's only two ways to fix that, right? I mean, there's supply of ads goes down or demand for ads goes up. And these are all consumer companies and you need more consumption, right? And the problem is if, you know, we see the RMB declining, and that typically means that the export-led type businesses do better and consumers do worse. So, you know, there's less, you know, if you kind of take a macro view of it. But anyway, what's next? Should we go to...
One more thing with Baidu. I'm wondering how much of this is a downstream effect of the end of the bubble, is that we saw this just so much money coming in, these super high valuations, and a lot of, you know, obviously these companies, many of them are not profitable. And now there's this just, the money just dried up so quickly. And now so many companies are under pressure to actually make those numbers work that, you know, what you're talking about, that the ad inventory, that price just shoots down because there's so much more of it out there. It's a supply demand thing. I think that's really interesting. But speaking of,
and there's also another piece of that. I just to add to it is that there's also a constraint. Like, you can't advertise and keep adding more and more inventory to your platform in this kind of race to more supply because users aren't going to like it and they'll go somewhere else. So you have to kind of, you add it enough that they'll stay, and you watch your churn numbers closely, and you make sure you're not losing engagement. And then if you are, you got to bring it back. And so, yeah, it's definitely a delicate balance. You know, props to the guys that are trying to do this at all these companies. I'm sure it's a tough job right now.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where the skill set that helps you build a company during when the bubble's being inflated is often the exact opposite of the skill set that is required to make these companies kind of operational and make them money makers. So it's a tough thing. Anyways, but I think our next company here on the list is, I think, very much a victim of that bubble bursting, and that's Xiaomi. So Xiaomi, at the beginning of the year, I have them at 12.2 Hong Kong dollars, and now they're trading at just under 8.9. So I have them at a 26% the loss. I don't know what you have. Right. You're somewhere around there.
Yeah, no, it's the same. Yeah, I mean, I have it about 30% year to date on Bloomberg, but the. Yeah, I should have said this before. The consumer index I have is down about 7 to 8% year to date. So that's kind of the barometer. If you open up, I don't know how we're going to share this, but if you open up maybe it's a post on TechNode or a PDF file or something, you open up, you can look through the charts. But yeah, so Xiaomi, I mean, they had a really
rough
beginning of the year.
Is it them? Like, what's the... Why?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like the saturated phone market. There's maybe a little bit of... I mean, they also went down with everybody else, you know, on the May 4th and continued going down throughout May and sort of bottomed at around the exact same time as the consumer index. So I think they're kind of impacted in the same way, you know, with all the Huawei stuff and not in that they were targeted, but in that you know, if you target one Chinese tech company, what's to stop you from targeting another one? You know, I think that's kind of...
In looking at Xiaomi, the question that I have is, and I think this is actually one of the first conversations that we ever had that actually got us to start doing this podcast in the first place, is it does seem like a lot of it is just a the market's finally figuring out what they're actually worth. And I think that I would put the blame on I think that they're a victim of the bubble. And I mean, they benefited from the bubble too. But there was no company that was more kind of emblematic of the, you know, rising Chinese innovation and that had more hype around it than Xiaomi. You know, it was seen as it was going to be this Chinese Apple. And it was, I just remember when they IPO'd just being like, it was just so much hype, you know? And they IPO'd at what was it, 17, almost 18 Hong Kong dollars. And now they're at roughly half that. I think a lot of it is when we remember you saying that, you know, you had them priced that a fair price for them was right around Hong Kong or 9 Hong Kong dollars. So I think it seems like a lot of it, this is more just, you know, the market kind of realizing what they're actually worth according to the metrics that investors use rather than just some sort of, you know, hype. But because what's different when you look at these charts is that Xiaomi's basically just been consistently going down. So it's a little bit up, a little bit down, but they don't really track the market or these swings in the market the way that some of these other ones do, where you'll see like, oh, well, this shoots down a lot when Trump tweets. You don't see that with Xiaomi. It just kind of has this kind of steady downhill trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, the big difference, and I just looked this up real quick, is in early January, their lockup from their IPO expired. And so it just sold off like pretty intensely, down about 10% in the chart here. So that's pretty significant. And that once that happened, that was the divergence from the index, right? So that was kind of the key piece.
But yeah, we'll see what happens with them.
Xiaomi is very cheap right now. I mean, I just want to say like it's trading at price to sales of like 0.74. What? And that's...
So it's not an earnings multiple, it's an earnings fraction.
Or sales, it's not a sales multiple, it's a sales fraction, yeah. It's below 1-to-1, you know, price to sales. So that's market cap divided by their trailing 12-month sales. Gross margins, you know, you're looking, I mean, they're low, so, you know, they're 12%, but that's kind of to be expected, I think, for that company. So it's not that unusual. But anyway. One of these days, Xiaomi, I don't know, what's the bull case? What turns it around? You know, they need to sell a lot more phones. They need to do better in China. They need to get their services kind of cranking up some more. If Huawei was taken out, that would be very good.
No, I would say this, though. This is my worry. Why it's kind of a no-win situation for them, even if... So the U.S. government goes after Huawei, blah, blah, blah. What we saw, Huawei's domestic sales went through the roof while their international sales fell off. I think that what we've seen, and they take market share from these guys like Xiaomi, Vivo, Oppo as well. There's a lot of these other, you know, smaller brands that are really struggling now that kind of got invested in when, you know, like 5 years ago. I think that the best case, so let's say Huawei keeps doing this because the more that Huawei gets attacked, the more Huawei's seen as this kind of like patriotic, you know, national champion within China. And there is this, you know, there's that, they have that brand, they have that, all that free publicity. And I think there's also like, you hear, you know, companies kind of, especially state-owned companies, like really, you know, kind of either directly or indirectly kind of encouraging employees to buy Huawei phones and stuff like that. That really matters. Like what Xiaomi has is that international market that they could lose, that as Huawei loses some of that international market, Xiaomi has an opportunity. But it's a little bit more of an uphill climb internationally compared to domestically, right? They don't already have everything set up. It's more, it requires more investment to go into some of these new areas. I mean, India, they continue to thrive in India. That is the real strong suit of them. And I think that they've built a real good brand so that as they kind of expand their product suite and India's economy develops and their consumers get more money, I think that that is a bigger bull case for them. But they're in a little bit of a pickle right now. So, but like I said, they're not an expensive stock, so that might be a good one as well. Let's move on to
I mean, if I was gonna just to finish wrap up, I'd leave with a couple questions. But if I was gonna dive into Xiaomi, I'd want to look at, you know, are they gonna be cash constrained, or are they gonna be okay for a couple of years? And if they are, then I mean, you know, if they can keep growing organically and, you know, maybe even have some growth capex if they can afford it, you know, this could be a good long-term play right now. Obviously not investment advice here, but yeah, so let's go Pinduoduo.
Sure. Do you want to do Luckin? Because I don't know where to put Luckin, because depending on whether you bought in primary or secondary, you're either basically even.
Let's do primary for okay, Luckin. Cool. Let's do Pinduoduo. Right. So
I have them up at +2% on the year.
Yeah. So that's roughly, yeah, +2%. Basically, Pinduoduo, when if you look at the chart with the consumer index, the big difference is mid-March, there was a big decline. And the reason why is they announced earnings. And, you know, it was not as great. Surprised, you know, in the Bloomberg earnings summary here, surprised down 250%. Below what analysts were expecting. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I think that's the big difference. Other than that, it's kind of roughly been trending. Though mid-July, it went up quite a bit faster than the index. So something sort of changed there. Yeah, right.
They are a crapshoot. I mean, we've covered them plenty. We don't need to go too much more into detail with them, but when you look at a quote unquote growth stock, right? These riskier, you know, tech stocks. Pinduoduo is like the best example, right? All these reasons to be bullish and to be terrified. All these reasons to be, you know, or to be bullish and to be really optimistic, or to be bearish and really be terrified. And their stock has gone up and down, you know, to meet either the highest hopes or the worst anxieties of their shareholders. It's been, it's entertaining. That's for sure. But yeah, it's kind of your classic example of the risky growth stock. Anyways, let's move on to, we have the next.
And by the way, yeah. they still don't have a CFO.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, Luckin.
No, wait, you want to Luckin now, or do you want to keep looking towards the end? Because if Luckin is 50, if we're going to say they're, if we're going to use primary, okay. So the next three are basically the ones who have, I think, that have tracked the index more closely. And that's Tencent, iQIYI, and Alibaba. First with Tencent. Tencent, I have them up 10% on the year. Is it just the market? What else do we have to say about, this is boring. They've been boring. They've been what you would expect. What else do we have to say about them?
I mean, so January, they announced that gaming approvals would come back. Mid-April, they announced that... Or is it February? They announced that there's too many approvals they have to do. And then right around April, the regulators announced that they're kind of back on track. But gaming approvals are not, they're not like they used to be. They're a lot slower, takes a lot more time. You know, the backlog, I'm sure, for the regulators is pretty huge. But, you know, Tencent, I mean, they did the Peacekeeper Elite kind of re-release, you know, without blood and stuff for PUBG mm-hmm. Mobile. That was mid-May. And the shares, I mean, just declined a lot. So in around April, it was up about 30%, almost 28% for the year. Then it dropped down to about up 5%. And then by the end of July, got back up to, you know, 21%, and then came back down with the last trade, tariff Trump tweets. So yeah, I think I kind of blame Trump a little bit here. I think that's they're kind of Tencent. These larger cap companies are probably seen as sort of investments that kind of cover broad market China, and so you can go long them if you're bullish China from a macro perspective, and you can go short them if you're not. So maybe this is part of the, and I would say probably the same thing for Alibaba. Yeah.
Yeah, I think one is, Tencent has, if you look at their earnings reports, you know, we've talked about them before, they've weathered this this gaming regulation storm quite well, comparatively well. And they're doing their best, but they are, you could tell, I don't know, I gotta cite this specifically, but they at China Joy, which was the gaming conference that was this past week, the big, you know, one of the biggest gaming conferences in the world, and it's the number one, you know, gaming conference in China. They announced that they were, it's their new platform that they're expanding or that they're launching. I don't know the specifics, but they announced it for Southeast Asia instead of for China's domestic market. And it makes complete sense, because if you're looking for real gaming growth, the growth that I think a lot of these gaming companies thought they were going to be seeing in China because of, you know, the way that gaming has expanded over the last 10 years, is not going to be happening in large part due to regulation, I think. And Southeast Asia is a lot more fertile ground. And I also think, we can move on to this next one here. It's this kind of theme, and I think this is a little bit overly simplistic, but oftentimes I will use this, I've been using this term lately, or this phrase lately, where it's like there's no fun in today's China. Like, in that, like, the gaming companies or the entertainment companies, like the regulations that they've cracked down on, it makes it really hard to know what the direction of for these companies are. TechNote had an article about this, it was supposed to be, what was it? It was a game where you had to basically be a city planner and kind of hit all these national development initiatives for your city to kind of promote kind of some of the certain, you know, the things that they want to be promoting within China that the party does, the government does. But it's SimCity, basically. But it's SimCity with kind of with Chinese characteristics. But it does seem like that there is the future of how of what gaming is going to look like, and how much that has to kind of merge with certain domestic national interests is we'll see how it goes. Next one, iQIYI.
Just because this also ties in with iQIYI, but this year is the 70th anniversary. And this is kind of a sensitive year, right? So
every year is sensitive in China. Like, there's always sensitive stuff happening. It's the Olympics. It's the anniversary of this, anniversary of that.
Yeah, so it's the 70th anniversary. And I think that makes things just a little bit more sensitive. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it'll change after. I mean, just for an example, I live actually right next to where they park all the tanks before they take them on the Chang'anjie. And so they've already kind of cleaned up the parking lot and they're already getting ready. So, you know, it's less than 2 months away. So,
all right.
Yeah, so iQIYI.
Well, maybe things will loosen up a little bit after. Yeah, iQIYI, they're up 13%, although they've had quite a wild ride. I remember us talking in December saying that it had been dropping and it was pretty cheap. And then it did very, very well after that throughout this year. What is the high that it hit this year? Do we have high?
It was up about 80%.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the year.
It was doing very well. Yeah. And now it's back down. It's at, basically it's at a 13% gain. But yeah, what is to blame, or, you know, where's the credit due for iQIYI's roller coaster?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, it got hammered down really low. It doesn't have that much time being a public company. It went all the way down to $15 a share, which was significantly below their IPO price. And then, you know, they had earnings. You know, one of the things I didn't like about their earnings was we talked about this already, but they changed some of their disclosure, the way they disclose their user numbers. But yeah, it's just kind of been guiding down. I think the problem was in March and May, I think as well, there was, you know, shows that they were planning to release couldn't get released. So there's there's content regulations, and when you've spent money on a product and you're ready to launch it and you're not allowed to sell it, that delays you getting your return on investment. And the longer you delay your return on investment, I mean, technically your IRR, right, which is all about time value of money, goes down. So, you know, tech, not a good thing. And then you have...
It's the Tencent story with the games too. I mean, it's pretty much the exact same thing.
I mean, at the end of the day, these content, it doesn't seem like it, but it's not hard physical goods, but this content is money that had to be spent to be turned into content, and the money's sitting in the content. It can't come out unless they can monetize it. They can't come out until they can show people the ads that accompany the content or that are even in the content. So it's, you know, this is a big problem anyway.
Yeah. Let's move on. Alibaba.
Yeah.
I have Alibaba up 17%. Pretty much tracking the market, maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, it's definitely better than the market.
At one point, I mean, I own Alibaba, full disclosure. At one point, I think earlier this year, I bought Alibaba with a group of tech stocks a while back. And Alibaba, I was like, whoa, Alibaba's killing it. They're returning better than anyone else. And then they kind of come back down to earth. But what is there remarkable about Alibaba at this point? I mean, their earnings calls are good. They keep growing. Jack Ma.
I mean, they're
stepping down
year over year revenue growth. I mean, the thing that's remarkable about them is they're not a new company and they're still growing their revenue at 50% a year. So that's incredible. You know, I mean, that's like a startup type thing. But, you know, how are they growing it? That incremental growth is coming from, you know, quite a bit of it's coming from local services. And those have, we've talked about this on other calls, but anyway, those have lower margins or even negative margins. And part of that's, you know, if you kind of, it depends on how you slice and dice the numbers, but some of that could be growth capex, some of that could be maintenance capex, right? If you're spending a lot on advertising and you're getting new users, that would be your growth capex. But if you're spending a lot of advertising just to get your old users back, I would call that maintenance capex. And so how you take a view of that is key when you look at local services.
This is, I want you to tell me what you think of this. So I've had a number of people say, you should ask me, okay, well, if you have to recommend, you know, one Chinese tech or internet company to hold as a stock, what would you hold? And like, after thinking about it, I usually end up saying, well, Alibaba, because I just can't imagine. First of all, Alibaba, if you compare it to an Amazon or a lot of its analog, it's still not, it's not a pricey stock. And I could see everything else failing before in China before I see Alibaba failing. And I know, like, if you talk to, you know, Ann Stevenson Yang or some of these, like, I like to follow Deep Throat IPO on Twitter. Hopefully we can have him on sometime, but it's kind of it's like the bear club, like like a lot of them are short sellers, or these folks that are like, a lot of them have real reasons to be bearish on some of these companies. Like they are really looking into the numbers, but you know they're obviously gonna tell you about all the problems with Alibaba. But like I don't see a reason to if Alibaba fails, everything else is failing in China.
I mean
that's my conclusion.
I don't know. There's got to be, like, how could it fail, right? If we didn't prepare any of this, so we're just going to be we're just flying from the hip. And also not investment advice. But like, how could Alibaba fail? Just,
it would be not investment advice.
It's probably a low probability event. But I mean, one thing, you know, if people suddenly, consumers shift their preferences of where they like to buy things, you know, that could probably negatively impact them, you know, if they shift away from Tmall and Taobao and things like that. But it just terribly unlikely. But, you know, that would be one way it could happen.
Wildly unlikely. And they're also, they're at a point where I think that they're just too big to fail, also within kind of the Chinese establishment. You know, they're so embedded into how everything works within China that I just can't see it going downhill.
Yeah, I think,
so
I mean,
that's my,
if I had to,
my two cents.
If I had to say why it's safe, I would probably argue more towards like, they create a lot of kind of economic value just by existing, right? Not that they capture a lot, but they create a lot. And that's because like all these, you know, small merchants can get on there and sell things. And that's a lot of people. That's what they do, right? But also, I mean, it's just, so it's just, it has a lot of economic value to the economy overall, to society. And that's, I think, one thing that's in their favor. You know, if you had to imagine you were a regulator, that'd be a reason not to be pretty harsh on them, right? Because regulation's kind of always a risk. I think we learned that this year more than, you know, or at least last year more than prior years. Yeah,
but I also, I don't see, I mean, unless there's the whole, even if they crack down on things like counterfeit goods, I don't see, you know, Tencent still has so much of their revenue based on gaming that, you know, they, even though they haven't really, you know, they've weathered the storm, you know, it seems like the worst that could happen already happened. For them, I don't see that same kind of thing happening with Alibaba because so much of their business is kind of these essential services. Anyways, let's move on to the next one. Up 28% on the year is Jingdong, ticker symbol JD, up from $21 per share, almost their low, their all time low almost, to $27 a share. So who's to blame or credit for this, James?
I mean, they went down. I mean, so if we're just looking at the Trump tweets, they were impacted by the initial Trump tweet and then kind of bounced back, but then also drifted down towards the end of May. But then the second Trump tweet, you know, they've come down quite a bit here. I don't know. I mean, this is, looks like it could be, at least the recent downturn in their share price could be due to that. But yeah, I think...
That's still up on the year.
Yeah, still up on the year. I mean, compared to minus 8% for this consumer index and up 27%. I mean, that's quite a difference.
Well, you have to zoom out with JD and think about there's two things that really impacted them. One is just last fall's kind of... like moving away from China that happened throughout the market. They were hit just about as bad as anyone else, perhaps more. I think they lost over 50% of value within the second half of last year. You can, don't quote me on that. Check your numbers. It's somewhere around there. And so there's that. But I think what made it worse was Richard Liu's arrest, the uncertainty about, you know, what would happen to him. And now it does seem like a lot of that has been cleared up a little bit, or at least you know, I'm not commenting on you know, on any of the you know, the rumors or whatever, but I'm it does seem like he won't be going to jail, and it does seem like they're in the clear legally. And so I think that's one of the reasons for this kind of recovery here, but also the recovery looks better because it was dropping so much last year. And then in addition to that, one thing I do see with JD, and for better or worse, is Richard has always responded to Wall Street. Like, he... I think one thing that he is very good at, for better or worse, is knowing who he needs to please, whether it be the consumer, right, or whether it be its shareholders, and taking the decision and making the difficult decisions, you know, upsetting people. You know, I remember we were talking about this a while back. The word from JD as they were laying people off earlier this year was just kind of these stories of chaos from the company. Meanwhile, the share price is going up, right? You know, they make these things that these decisions that I think will upset some of their staff, or maybe make the company sound a little difficult to work for. You know, the word on the street isn't so good within Beijing, but they please their necessary shareholders. Anyways, I think that, you know, JD is they have a lot of changes to make, and they seem to be quite aggressive in trying to make those changes happen. And we'll see if they succeed or not. But if you're an investor, that is at least something to feel better about. Although, you know, I don't know if I would want to be working for them this year. It's the stories you hear out of JD aren't the most pleasant at the moment. But anyways, yeah. Anything else to say about JD?
I think I just looked real quick. The reason why they kind of had a big shoot up in February as they beat earnings towards the end of February. They beat earnings by a lot. The street had them at like a loss, and they came in at a profit. So that was huge.
But what was their next? Were they at a loss again their next quarter?
No, their next quarter they also beat.
Really?
Yeah, okay. They've been doing well. So their earnings are doing well, and I think that definitely is reflective in their share price. So bravo to their performance, I'd say.
All right. So next one, you want to do Meituan or you want to do Luckin?
We can do... Let's do Luckin.
Okay. So Luckin, depending on whether you bought them in primary or secondary, you're basically... If you bought them the way that I buy them, you're pretty much at best even. But if you subscribed to their IPO early, you're doing really well. What about like 50% up?
Yeah, if you bought the IPO like before, you know, pre-IPO, it priced at $17, you're up 52.6%. If you bought right when they became listed, you know, at like 11 a.m. or whatever at $25, then you're up 3.8%. So, you know, this one is, I mean, their earnings are coming up this week. So this is going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to that.
This is the most Luckin thing ever. And I mean that in a probably not a good way. They had a big meeting. I saw some big, it was a couple of weeks ago. There was this article about them doing some big launch in like Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Or like the UAE. Like, it's just like, why are they expanding there? It's just all sorts of question marks. But it's one of those things where it has Luckin written all over it, where there's just
growth.
You don't see that kind of rhyme or reason. Yeah.
Growth
but
story.
It's why growth there? Why growth there? I don't know. Like, I listeners know my feelings about Luckin. I think they're shady as hell.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I've got like a spreadsheet. I'm just ready to type in all their metrics when they announce earnings in a few days, and it's going to be, I mean, we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to do an episode on that. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, it's literally, it had a big correction after IPO, and it's just been, moving up. I mean, very volatile stock, but it's been moving up and up 52%. That's incredible. I mean,
it is amazing what the phrase Chinese Starbucks can do for Wall Street.
Yeah. I mean, Wall Street, the reason why that works so well is like Wall Street looks at Starbucks and it's done a great job. I mean, the stock is stellar. Their margins are amazing. I mean,
in China, especially, Starbucks killed it in China.
It's doing very well in China. Now, my Starbucks mobile app, I can order Starbucks and get it delivered. and they have subsidies to make the delivery free. They have all these like, anyway.
Sounds like a page out of Luckin's playbook.
Yeah, it is, but also, I mean, it's funny because people just say Starbucks is the only competitor to Luckin, but that's actually not true. There's Yum China, which has their own coffee businesses. There's, if you just want cheap coffee, I mean, the cheapest coffee around me is 7-Eleven. Mm-hmm. They just put in like a machine and they just have someone take a cup and push the button. And it's, you can get iced, like an iced Americano is 8 RMB, which is incredibly cheap for China.
Or Weidong, man. You remember? Like, yeah. Or the, what
oh,
is
yeah,
it?
That coffee is pretty bad.
Yeah. I used to always get, what is it? It's like the English, I forgot the Chinese. The English was like Auspicious Phoenix. It was like one of those, you know, those cheap bakeries. But they upped the price now because they kind of, did up their locations. But I used to go, they had this location between, I lived at Dongzhimen Y in Beijing, and I would walk to the subway in the morning, and they would sell 12 RMB lattes. So for those, it's less than $2. And they were perfectly fine. And I would get one of those every morning. And now they're more expensive. But that was, I was like, I'm not going to Starbucks if I can get that. Anyways, anything else to say about Luckin?
I think that's all. We'll have a lot to talk about them later this week.
Okay, and next drum roll, the best performing stock on our watch list for 2019 thus far, Meituan Dianping. I have them at 41.2 Hong Kong dollars at the beginning of the year. Now they're trading at over 60, at 63.5. That's up 54%. I don't know if you have anything different, but yeah, they're doing fantastic this year.
Yeah, 54%. I mean, they just, their chart compared to this consumer index is, it couldn't be more different. It is just basically up and to the right. There was a little bump up, like a little hill here in February, came back in March, but then it's just done very, very well. Looks like it might have broken some sort of support line there in mid-July, but I don't know if you want to get into technical analysis, but yeah, they've beaten earnings the last two earnings, so yeah, they're doing well. I mean,
so this is all on them. This is the wonderful the magic, the managerial magic of Wang Xing.
I think it's got to be there's got to be something about Meituan that's clearly working for the market. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a position. Of course, sort of obviously regret that a little bit, but you can't dwell on regret in the markets. But yeah, this is let's see what happens.
Yeah, I had I also have talked about getting a position in them, and then I did not. a few things here. One is they're still below IPO price. They IPO'd in September, right? And then the market's nosedived ever since. But yeah, but they've recovered, and it seems to be on them. Like they seem to have, they're beating estimates, and also they seem to be making the tough decisions. Right, they basically wrote off all of Mobike, in essence. I mean, you could check me on that one. But that's yeah. I mean, I've said this for a while. When it comes to the cash burners, you know, these big cap, large cap cash burners. Whether it's, I mean, Didi hasn't gone public yet, but, you know, what is it? Meituan, Pinduoduo, right? These ones that are, you know, they're newer. They're worth, you know, $20 to $30 billion or more. And they're still burning a lot of cash. Like Meituan, I think is head and shoulders above the rest. They have better management. They have kind of more widely diversified, avenues of business. And they seem to have a long-term strategy that the others don't.
So the thing that they're killing, that they're doing really well on is the, and if I remember this correctly, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's their hotel booking.
Yeah.
I think they actually surpassed Ctrip.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is technically the, you know, kind of the incumbent. And these guys are the rising you know, contender, and they surpass them. And I think that's really driving. It's clearly they're doing something that C-Trip's not, and they've figured something out, and that's key. And, you know, booking hotels is a great business. It's high margin. You know, this is it's probably got a lot of legs if they can keep it going.
And they have data.
Another key point.
They have data that a lot of these other companies like don't, just because of how much that app is in. Like it's what.
Well,
you know, people talk about
it's probably touch points, like frequency of use is probably really big. Like if you're going to open C-Trip, you probably open it, you know, when you're thinking about a trip or something. You're not, but if you want to do just about anything, you might be opening Meituan on a daily basis, or at least several times a week, maybe. I don't know. I don't use it that much, but I do like their Meituan delivery. They have this thing where you can basically send anybody on an errand to go do something. And that could be anything.
Like a TaskRabbit type thing?
Sort of, yeah. Like they can go pick up something and bring it to you or drop it off. But just like you were saying before, look, like Meituan started the year at the lowest price. I mean, it's literally ever been, I think. It was, you know, January 2nd, 41.2. That was the bottom of their share prices. So obviously, you know, they've had when you pick this date, if we go back like a month or go forward a month, you know, it's going to be totally different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've done, they still have done very well.
Good on them. Yeah. All right. So congratulations to Meituan, and our condolences to Baidu, our best and worst on our list thus far this year. Anything else we should say before we sign off here?
I think stay tuned for the Luckin earnings review that we're going to do.
Yeah. Also, I think what I think we need to put out an article or something like that, kind of going into everything that we talked about today, including your index and kind of pointing everything out so people can have something visual to look at, because we aren't we can't show that through our audio medium. So, anyways, yeah. Anything else before we sign off?
That's all.
Thank you to our producer Peter, and Joy.
Oh, and if you like the new format, please let us know. This is sort of a new first time we're trying this. I don't know if we might do it periodically. Maybe make it a periodic kind of check in on this.
Yeah.
But if you like it, let us know. Any feedback, let us know. And if obviously subscribe, tell your friends, give us a review, 5 stars, write a review. Writing the review really helps on iTunes.
Yeah.
That's kind of the key. Yeah.
And also, we are kind of experimenting with the format just a little bit. So if there are things that you like, or you know, approaches that we have that you think are particularly useful, let us know. And join us again next time on the China Tech Investor Podcast. Bye-bye now.